Hey everybody, it's Mike. Welcome or welcome back to the Revision Church Podcast. While you're here, make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel and download the Revision app, which is actually the best way to get access to new content and share it with friends. You can get the app by texting Revision app to 77977. Thanks for listening today. My hope is that this message will be helpful for you and would inspire you to take the next step on your faith journey.
Amen. You guys can take a seat. Well, my name is Mike. I'm one of the pastors here. I'm excited to be here this morning. How about you? All right. I want to kick things off with a question for you. How many of you have ever had one of those dreams where you show up at work or school and everyone's staring at you and you can't figure out why? And then you look down and realize in horror that you're just wearing your underwear. Anybody? Yeah. Thank you. I know some of you have. I read an article by a psychologist who specializes in dreams this week, and he said that's actually one of the most common dreams in the world, which is weird because it's something that has never actually happened to most of us. My senior year, I played football on a real bad team. We spent most Friday nights in the fall losing. But our last game of the season was winnable. It was at a school about an hour away. And it was kind of exciting for those of us who were seniors, the thought that we might be able to end our less than illustrious football careers with a victory. And the game was pretty close for four quarters, and then they scored late, and we lost. Just our football careers went out with a whimper, and we dejectedly shuffled back to the locker room, threw our uniforms into the laundry bag, and as my fellow seniors were standing around pensively considering the fact that our football careers were over and we were done playing ball, my mind shifted to a different spot, because I realized, oh man, I forgot my travel bag. I have nothing to wear. I was standing in a locker room in my undershirt, underwear, socks, and football spikes thinking, I'm never going to live this down. Someone is going to come up with a nickname for me on the walk between this locker room and the bus. It's a long walk, or at least on the ride home, and this is just going to define my senior year. And then I remember my buddy Joe always wore these shorts under his football pants that he had not washed all season, like months of practices and games. And I was like, Joe, you got to give me your shorts. He's like, really? Are you serious? Man, I don't have anything else to wear. I can't walk out of here in my underwear. Give me your shorts. And so he tossed them to me, and I put them on and told the coach, I'm going to ride home with my dad since it's the last game. And we made it 2 miles down the road before my dad pulled off on the side of the highway and said, throw the shorts out the window. I will buy Joe new shorts. I can't even breathe in here. And I did, and I rode home in my underwear in my parents' car. And that's how close I came to actually living out the nightmare of going to high school in your underwear. And looking back, I kind of wish I would have gone for it. Because, you know, the nickname would have been funny. I don't know what it would have been, but it just would have been funny. And also because I can still smell those shorts. Just they're in my brain. But it's the thing about nicknames. Like, sometimes we get them because of something great we did or some noble character trait, but usually they're just attached to our stupidest moments and our deepest failures. And we just get called that for the rest of our life. And that's kind of a phenomenon that exists in a broken world full of broken people. It's really easy to be defined and to define ourselves by our greatest regrets and our deepest failures, to allow those things to really shift what we see when we look in the mirror and how we relate to the world around us. Whatever struggles we've got, whether they're current or in the past, are always a threat to powerfully define our identity. And we all have them. We've failed at work and been fired from jobs. We've seen relationships and marriages break down. We've struggled in our relationships with our kids or our parents, with friends who have become more of a burden than they are a blessing. We've bombed projects at work or bombed assignments at school, been hit with financial difficulties. Some of our businesses have struggled or even shuttered during this pandemic. We know what it is to fail. And some of the struggles in our lives are completely beyond our control. Others are a direct result of our inadequacy. But however we got there, the reality is we all have cracks and wrinkles in our stories. And whether the weight of life feels heavy for you right now or not, as we look back at the imperfections in our journeys, it's easy to find ourselves asking, why? Why me? Why this? Why now? Why did God allow this to happen? I've been trying to follow him. Why would he let this occur in my life? Does he even care about my struggles? Does God care if I have a good life? And it's a powerful question to ask, and the implications are pretty significant, because I think that most of us would say, I want to have a good life. I would. I want a good life. I want to grow to be really old. Not because it looks fun to have even more weird aches and pains than I already do just rolling out of bed in the morning, but I want to grow to be really old so I can say whatever I want and not get in trouble. Like, I can't believe Grandpa said that to that man. He's old. That's what I want to do. I want a good marriage. I want good relationships with my kids. I want good friends that make my life better just because I'm around them. I want to eat good food. Anybody else? Like cows, chickens, pigs, when they get cooked up just right, I want to eat them. I love it. I love banana bread. I have the ingredients to make banana bread with me this morning. So if I get hungry, I'm gonna whip it up. You're just gonna have to deal with it. But like, I love that stuff. I want a good life, and I think most of us do. There might be one or two weirdos out there who are like, I wanna suffer. Have at it. That's not difficult in this world. But most of us want a good life, and then we look at our lives, and we look at our stories, and we look at the brokenness, and we look at the failures, and we look at the regrets, and we're like, it doesn't feel very good right now. Does God want a good life for me? Like, does he really? Because somewhere in the back of our minds, we've been told that he does, but then bad things happen and we get this messed up God image where we're thinking like, maybe he just gives good gifts so that he can take them away again. Like, he's this practical joker who blesses us and then waits around the corner so he can give us a nice pile drive to the face, a nice punch to the face, and just take it right back again. And we start to wonder, like, if I'm actually following God, if I'm doing the things that I'm supposed to be doing, if I'm caring about him, if I believe in Jesus, why doesn't he prevent every bad thing from happening in my life? I thought he would have done that. What's up with that? But the Bible tells us again and again and again that God is a good God who wants good things for his children. That he's a good God who wants good things for his children. And I know some of you might be sitting there thinking, well, he's not getting what he wants. And I want to lean into that this morning. I want to ask the question, what do we do with our worst moments? How do we move forward from our deepest failures? Like, big or small, how do we navigate the inevitable frustrations of life? The Apostle Paul has something to say about that. So if you have a Bible or a Bible handy, you can crack it open to the book of Romans, chapter 8. If you don't have a Bible handy, you can follow along with the words on the screen or in the Revision app. And if you need one or your kids need one, there is a bunch and a bunch of different colors back at the Next Steps table. They're free, and we love it when they disappear. We're actually going to do a super zoomed in look at one verse in Romans chapter 8. It's one of the most famous verses in the entire Bible. In Romans 8, verse 28, Paul writes, "And we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose." There have been times in my life when this verse was a source of great comfort for me. There have been times in my life where this verse stretched my capacity to believe so much that I prayed it sarcastically at God and wished it wasn't in the Bible. Because it's really great in theory, but it's really hard when you need it. It's awesome to say, I believe that God's a healer, right up until the point where you need healing. It's great to say, I believe God will provide, right up until the point where you're desperate for him to provide, because if he doesn't come through, you're in a spot you'll never get out of. It's great to say, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me, until you find yourself in a situation in which you need his strength because yours is insufficient. Then it's a whole lot harder to say those things or actually believe them, even if we can say them. And when that happens, when we find ourselves needing to believe the things that we'd say we believe, we have this anxiety and this fear and this hopelessness that begins to well up inside of us, this sense that the situation we're in is going to overwhelm us. And those all come from a place where we look at the reality of our relationships or our lives at any given moment and we say, this is not good. I can't figure out any way for this to become good. This is never, ever gonna be good. It isn't. Then we crack open our Bibles, and what does Paul say? We know. Now we think, now we suspect that possibly, now like we're inclined to believe, we know that in all things, not some things, not a few things, not a certain set of things, we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him, who've been called according to his purpose. That is a big time promise. And if we're going to live into the fullness of what that promise means for us, then we got to understand what Paul is and is not saying here. Because I think this verse is easy to misinterpret. And I know that there's a lot of people, even people who mean well, who have decided that this must be saying some things that it isn't saying. And so I want to talk about those this morning. And the first thing that Romans 8:28 is not saying is that you'll basically get what you deserve. Paul isn't trying to hint to us here that there's this unseen force in the universe that works in like a karmic way to make sure that everyone basically gets what they've earned. And so if you're a pretty good person, it'll work out for you in the end. That's not what Romans 8:28 says. It's not what the whole of Romans chapter 8 says. Romans chapter 8 says that there is a God in heaven who created human beings in his image. We rejected him and ran away, but he loved us too much to leave us in that broken space. And so he stepped in and he gave his life for ours so that we could be forgiven and set free. And if you put your faith in that God, even though you're still living in a messed up world, you'll be able one day to look back at all the messed up parts of your life and see that same mighty God weaving together every thread, even the painful ones, for your good because of his mega love for you. The second thing Romans 8:28 does not say is that your life will be perfect. All things include bad things. This verse doesn't say everything that happens to you will increase your pleasure, your comfort, or your net worth. That's not how the world works, and that's not how God works in the world. And this verse doesn't even say that life will be easy. I'll be real with you this morning. Following Jesus has not been easy for me. Not for quite some time. Like planting a church with a handful of people and no money isn't easy. Leading for the last 18 months in the middle of a pandemic where people have decided that they're going to see their faith through the lens of their politics rather than their politics through the lens of their faith, and they're divided and angry at everyone, has not been easy. I could make a whole long list of other things that haven't been easy over decades of following Jesus, and so could every single other person in this room who's been walking with Jesus for any amount of time. But this verse doesn't promise us easy. And it doesn't promise us perfect. What it promises us is that if we will believe and we'll put our faith in that God, then one day we will be able to reflect on the difficulties and the imperfections and see that God was doing something we couldn't see in the moment. We'll be able to say, man, I would not have believed it if you told me. I would have bet my bottom dollar that nothing good could have ever come out of this. But look at what God was doing behind the curtain of the world in my life. Next thing that this verse does not say is that God causes all things. It doesn't say God causes everything. That whatever horrible, painful, broken, frustrating thing you're going through in this life is a direct result of something God did to you or God orchestrated to happen to you. I think that idea, and especially that idea when it gets applied to this verse, get twisted so much, even by people who really mean well and are trying to be helpful, that it becomes a source of deep disillusionment for a whole lot of people. There's a recent study done of Christians, or people who self-profess as Christians across the United States, and what it found is that a massive percentage of them have basically stalled out in their faith. They still go to church occasionally, or even most Sundays, but they've largely given up on all of the other spiritual disciplines that help them grow. They're not serving. They're not in group. They're not giving generously. They're not even praying or reading their Bibles. And as the study dug in and asked some deeper questions about why, what it found is that a whole lot of the stalled Christians in our society are there because something happened to them that just knocked the wind out of their sails. Some event happened that just caused them to stumble and struggle. And they're like, look, I want to follow God, but I'm hurting right now and I'm struggling to believe in a God who would do this to me. Because somewhere along the line that they came to think, or they got told by somebody, that God caused their suffering, that he did this to them so that somehow he could be glorified through their heartbreak. Look, here's the deal. Sometimes God causes difficult things in our lives that feel bad. There's a word for that. It's called discipline. Sometimes I cause difficult things in my kids' lives that feel very, very bad to them. I took Jimmy's Xbox controller away for a week, and it felt so bad. It felt so, sorry, that was really fun as a dad. It felt so bad, but I did it because I need my kids to understand there are consequences in this life. I know that discipline is the pathway that gets them from where they are to the good lives that I want for them. And so sometimes God is the cause of things that feel bad in our lives because he cares and he loves us, but not all the times. He's not directing every bad thing in your life. He's not up there zapping you with lightning. You guys, the Bible makes this clear. We could spend a whole morning on it. We could spend a whole series or a whole year talking about the problem of evil and suffering in the world. But the Bible tells us that those things exist because we chose it and we choose it. That God created human beings with the ability to choose him or choose not him. And so many of the difficulties we suffer in this life come from our choice of not him and the choices of the people around us. Other difficulties come from the great enemy of our souls. Paul tells us that our fight is not against flesh and blood and other people, but against the powers and the authorities and the rulers of this dark world. John 10:10 tells us there's a thief who comes to lie, kill, and destroy. Make no mistake, there's an enemy of your soul who is hell-bent on your destruction, and his plan includes loss, death, and destruction. That's real. And sometimes there are difficulties in our lives because of natural laws in a messed up world. Tsunamis, hurricanes, tornadoes, they exist. And sometimes there's suffering in our world because of stupid decisions. Just dumb stuff. Some of you have heard this story before, but about 7 years ago, Jenny and the kids were out of town for a weekend and our microwave was broken. And I decided I wanted to show her what like a manly, this is always bad whenever I'm trying to be manly, but I was like, I'll get some husband points. I'll replace the microwave. So I went out and I bought one. And the sticker on the box said, team lift only. And the warning sticker on my old microwave said the same thing, but I'm an American, so I don't have to do what they say. I was like, I'm just gonna do it. And I got the old microwave off the wall and things were going great until something happened. The power cord got stuck in the cabinet above it. Like the hole was too small. And I'm not gonna win any World Strongman competitions anytime soon. I need to tell you that, you're looking at me. So I'm hanging out there like, oh man, I'm gonna drop this microwave. Then I'm gonna have a broken microwave and a broken stove. And if I'm lucky, a gas leak, that'll be great. So I came up with this last ditch plan. I was like, I'm gonna hold it with one hand and just yank the cord as hard as I can. And so I did, and it totally worked, and the microwave was free, and I was like walking across the kitchen, like, yes! And I set it down, and that's when I turned around and saw the trail of blood. And I knew that when I yanked the cord, I had hit my finger against the pressed steel plate that was holding the old microwave on the wall, but I didn't know how bad it was. And I had blood all over, so I walked over to the sink and I rinsed it off and I held some paper towels on it. And eventually I was like, all right, I gotta see how bad this is. And I peeled back the paper towels and there was my bone. My finger bone, it was right there. I actually have a picture of it that I brought. I'm kidding, that'd be so gross. But like, then I thought I was gonna pass out. So I called Jenny, I was like, hey, I just saw my bone. I'm gonna go to urgent care, send someone to check on me if I don't call you back in 20 minutes. And as she's screaming, what, into the phone, I hung up. Not the only time that's happened. And then like, oh. So I drove myself to urgent care and got it stitched. And then I put up the new microwave, like a man. But anyways, like, here's the reason I tell that story. I think if I had passed out while I was walking down the stairs and hit my head on something and died, or crashed my car on the highway because I passed out and died, there's some really well-meaning Christians that have been like, heaven just needed another angel. God just took him home, used the microwave to do it. And there'd be some other like really well-meaning Christians that are like, them microwave plates are a tool of the devil, I tell you. I'm boycotting microwaves. Satan's taking out pastors. Like, and they would have meant it. And I think I would have been getting off easy, though. Like, there's some blame in this situation. Like, maybe we just look at that and be like, look, I don't know if there's anything supernatural here. There's just something super stupid. And that something is Mike. He was super stupid. I saw, like, too many times, too many people waste too much time trying to figure out who's responsible. Like, who caused what? Let's go back to the verse. We know that in all things, whatever caused it, whoever caused it, even if we caused it, all things. God works for the good, not the comfort and not the pleasure, but the good of those who love him, who've been called according to his purpose. Which leads me to the last thing this verse does not say. It does not say God works for the good of everyone. It doesn't. It says he works for the good of those who love him, who've been called according to his purpose. That means if you've given your life to Jesus, he's at work in your life. And it means if you haven't, if you haven't put your faith in the fact that the God who knit the universe together stepped out of eternity into history and gave his life on a cross to pay the penalty for your sins so that you could be forgiven and set free, that that same God unlocked death from the inside so that you could live. If you haven't put your faith in that, you should, because it's true and it's free. And it changes everything about your life, including claiming this promise for you. I'll be real, I would not want to live in a world as dangerous and chaotic as this one if I didn't believe that God was working in every moment, the good moments and the medium moments and the broken moments behind the scenes of my life for my benefit. Like, this verse is such an incredible promise that has meant so much to me. And I think the reality of our world is outside of Jesus, sometimes bad things are just bad and they just accomplish bad. But in the hands of Jesus, even the ugliest moments in our lives can be turned into something beautiful. That's what this verse is saying. It's a mind-blowing, perspective-shifting guarantee that whoever or whatever caused your pain, frustration, or failure, God is eventually going to weave that, as awful it is, or as awful as it is, into an incredible tapestry. And at some point, you'll be able to look back. And even though you still call a tragedy, and a loss, and a failure, you'll be able to see very clearly how God worked to transform you in incredible ways through the situation. And when that happens, you're going to shake your head and say, I never saw that coming. I would have never seen that coming. I would have never believed that God could have pulled that off. But that's what Paul's getting at here. And here's the big idea of Romans 8:28. I want us to all walk out of here knowing that we know it deep down at the core of our souls. Like, I don't know where you've struggled or where you're struggling right now, but I want you to know this. And if you've been around Revision for any length of time, you've heard me say it before and you'll hear me say it again. This is the big idea of Romans 8:28. If it's not good, then God's not done. If you know Jesus, that's true for you in every space and every moment of your lives. If it's not good, then God's not done. I want you to look at the person next to you right now. Look at somebody and tell them, if it's not good, God's not done. How do you know that? How do you know that I didn't just make you all be a bunch of filthy liars to each other? I did, haha. No, here's how we know that. God's always done it. He's never left anything broken yet for thousands and thousands of years. This is how he's lived. We know how God works and who God is because we know how God has worked and how God has been. We have confidence that this is what God is gonna do because this is what God has done again and again and again and again and again. Every single time he's been asked to prove himself faithful to his people, he has proven himself faithful. And that is incredibly hope generating for us. And the thing is, we need that kind of hope to come in and fill up the cracks and the wrinkles in our stories. We need it because a whole lot of our lives are spent waiting on the good. Like, a whole lot of life in a jacked up world is spent waiting in the place that we don't want to be for God to somehow take the shattered spaces that we're in and turn them good. And we need hope because we have to wait on God. And waiting is hard, especially when we're hurting. It's frustrating and it's heartbreaking. And every time it causes us to wonder, why didn't God just prevent this in the first place? Why didn't he stop it? And the truth is, sometimes we got to live and die without getting a good answer to that question. We know that he could. And when he doesn't, we say, why? Why not? Why me? Why this? Why now? Why? And I don't know. I'll be lying to you if I stood up here and told you that I have a great answer for every one of those whys, or that you'll ever get one in this life. I just know that part of it is that God has given us the ability in love to choose him or choose something else, and he operates in the world in light of that. And that means that he's not in the prevention business as much as he is in the redemption business. I think God is not in the prevention business nearly as much as he is in the redemption business. He isn't the cause of every difficulty that comes into our lives, of every struggle that we have, of every failure, but he is the one who's working in the middle of those to turn them good, to redeem the cracks and wrinkles in our stories and to make them beautiful. I have a friend named Brenda. She's one of the most incredible people that I've ever met, and she has a story with some deep brokenness in it, and she spends her life wading through other people's messes, walking into their hurt so that they can find hope and see Jesus in the middle of that. And she has this phrase that she repeats again and again and again. I love it. She says, God never wastes a hurt. God never wastes a hurt. He never leaves us right where we were before. He never abandons us to our pain. He never ignores us when we're at our worst. Instead, he dives in. He rolls up his sleeves and gets his hands dirty in your mess. You, the person sitting in your chair right now, he steps into the human story to be involved with you because he loves you and he cares. That's who he is. And even in our worst moments, even when God doesn't change them and didn't prevent them, he shifts our perspective in a way that helps us see the world around us more like Jesus saw it. And ultimately, that's the good that Paul's talking about here. That's the good that he's getting at in Romans 8:28. In the very next verse, he says, God is shaping us into people who are more Jesus-shaped than we were before. And the more Jesus-shaped we are, the better we're able to live into our created creative purpose and write a better story for a broken world. It's just that the ingredients that go into that transformation, the steps along the process of moving from the shape that we're in to being more Jesus-shaped are sometimes not that fun, sometimes not that comfortable, sometimes they're awful all on their own. Kind of like the ingredients that go into banana bread. If I offered you just one of these ingredients today, I don't think I'd have a lot of takers. Like if anyone wants to, you can run up right now, I'll give you a mouthful of baking soda. Just, you know, I'll dump it right in there. Just be tasty, right? Or what about, this was frozen this morning, but it isn't now. Who wants me to throw a rotten banana or a raw egg to them, at them, however I throw it? You don't know. Anybody? Or even heat. I went to the state fair on Thursday. The heat index was over 100. I learned I don't want to be 100 degrees. I definitely don't want to be more than 100 degrees. But here's the thing, if you take some nasty baking soda, a gross banana, a raw egg, and you put some uncomfortable heat to it, what comes out? Something delicious. And in our lives, like, we have the myopia of just seeing one ingredient at a time, but sometimes even in our suffering, what this verse is trying to tell us is that if we just zoom out or if we just trust, God is mixing together a better story. He's mixing together something that we can't see so that he can do in and through us what he wants to do in and through us, not just to write a better story for us, but to write a better story for our world, to create the future he wants to create. Look, living through the hard is hard, and it's never not going to be hard. Waiting on God is hard. We need hope to do it. But I think the only thing in our lives worse than waiting on God is getting to the end and wishing we would have waited on God. Wishing we would have trusted in this promise to see all that he was doing. Like Paul promises us in Romans 8, God never wastes a hurt. And I know it sounds completely crazy, but maybe, just maybe, the creator of the universe, the one who dreamed this whole thing up and spoke it into being, knows what he's doing even when we don't. Like God is at work, finding us right where we're at, right in the middle of our sufferings, joining us there, sharing in the bearing, like carrying the weight for us when it's too heavy for us to carry all on our own, helping us get from where we are to where he wants us to be. We know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him, who've been called according to his purpose. And for some of us, maybe who haven't experienced deep failure or loss or pain, that's a really great theory and a really great promise. For those of us who are in the middle of it, it's a lifeline. And for those of us who've been there, this is a treasure. And so my prayer this morning is just that we'll change the way that we think and we'll change the way that we see the brokenness. Because there is no way we're going to avoid it. Like whether it's this week or this month or this year, difficult things are going to come into every single one of our lives. But I really believe that if we can look through the lens of this promise in Romans 8:28, if we can walk out the doors today into a difficult world, into a shattered space, and believe that if it's not good, God's not done, then he's going to transform us. He's going to help us be more Jesus-shaped than we were before, help us live into the fullness of our created creative purpose. Write a better story for a broken world and be all that he made us to be. And when we start doing that, when we start living with that hope, when we start believing so much in the idea that if it's not good, God's not done, that hope comes in and seeps in and fills up every crack and every wrinkle in our lives, then we're able to live the bold lives we were made for. We're able to walk out and be less afraid of failing at things that really matter than we are afraid of succeeding at things that don't, because we know that God walks with us through the failures and he walks with us through the pain. And so my prayer is just that we will walk out today, every single one of us, convinced that if it's not good, God's not done. And knowing that in the middle of the pain that we're experiencing now and the middle of the pain that will come, God has not abandoned us there, but he's walking with us and he's doing something big, not just in us, but through us, so that we can be a part of what he's doing to draw the world to himself and to create a better future in this broken world. Will you guys pray with me? God, thanks. Thanks for not leaving us in our broken spot. Lord, we've all made choices to walk away from you. We've all suffered from the choices of others and from the brokenness of this planet. And it's hard. It's hard to suffer. It's hard to wonder why. It's hard to not have answers. It's hard to move forward sometimes when we feel crushed by the weight of life. But would you just thunder in our souls this morning? Thunder this idea, this promise that you make us, that if it's not good, you're not done. That even if we can't see it, one day, at the end of it all, we will be able to look back and just be amazed at what you did and how you did it. Would you transform our hearts and our lives? Would you make us more Jesus-shaped than we are right now? And as you shape us into that, would you just give us eyes to see who it is you're calling us to be, what it is you're calling us to do, the kind of difference you're calling us to make, and just how deeply you love us and hold us in every moment of our lives. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.